are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and everyone I've talked to today is just has an opinion on this story that came out that a woman has filed a $5 million lawsuit against Starbucks for putting too much ice in her drinks. She accuses the coffee chain of fraud, negligent misrepresentation, and unjust enrichment. So, of course, the first thing we knew we had to do was call the smarter, brighter, more at the handsome half of legal face off. We have Rich Lenkov on the line. Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Hey, Patty, how are you?
I'm very well. How do you order coffee? You a hot coffee guy, an iced coffee guy, a frap guy? What do you like? Tea?
And ever since the McDonald's lawsuit, I'm afraid to order coffee because I'm afraid that it'll be hot. So I just I gave it up years ago.
Okay, if we're going to start there, if we're going to go with the frivolous lawsuit about – a lot of people said that. I remember there was a comedian that said, you know, for that much money, I would take a swan dive into the fryer. But I've seen some stories about that. The woman that filed that suit and ultimately won, the temperature at which the coffee was actually burned through her groin. I mean, there was a lot of scar – there was a lot of damage done. I don't know how much you've ever read on that one. Have you ever followed up on that?
Yeah, for sure. We've covered it on the show. A lot of misconceptions about the case. Stella, I think her name is Stella Liebeck. She was awarded almost $3 million. She did suffer third-degree burns, had some skin grafting.
There's a
documentary about it, too. I don't know if you saw the Hot Coffee movie.
Yeah, because ultimately a lot of restaurants change the temperature at which they keep their coffee. It was too hot for what should be served. I mean, people could be burning their – I mean, there were a lot of different – you know, usually you drink hot coffee and think, oh, I should have waited or I should have put cream in it. But it was legitimately coffee that was being served too hot. And she happened to be holding the coffee, whether it was on the side. Anyway, that's something where there was obviously an injury, and she had to have surgeries, and it was very painful. In this case, I know that Craig was telling me that you might have an opinion when it comes to suing Starbucks over too much ice in their coffee. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have an opinion, too. I think it's nuts. I mean, like, I think like most people in the world, I think when we heard this news today it's a frivolous lawsuit. These are the kind of lawsuits that I defend every day. I represent, lots of big companies like Starbucks. Suing Starbucks because there's too much ice in iced coffee is nuts, but not surprising.
You say something, Craig, but I have a point to what you do because I think that you're very smart about it, and it's actually then the consumer's responsibility in this point. Go ahead, Craig.
So you're saying it's the consumer's responsibility to make the barista aware that maybe there's been a oversight and ice has been put in the glass because,
You prefer less ice.
I ask for more ice. We have the power as the consumer to edit the amount of ice.
I ask for no ice, and as a consumer that goes in and asks for, say, one of their venti 24-ounce drinks, mm-hmm. I'm expecting roughly 20-some-odd ounces of beverage. And when I get, 14 ounces because it's full of ice, I'm a little sad.
Well, then I get to sue all chip companies. I get to sue McDonald's because the burgers on TV look different.
But there is an advertised
size. If this
lady
wins, she has to share the money with all of us.
There is an advertised, ounces. And then up on the little board, you can ask them, how big a venti is. It's not a mystery. They are advert. So isn't this kind of faulty advertising?
No, not at all. No, not at all, because it's common sense that when you order a drink with the word ice in it, that there's going to be ice in it. And, to say that ice is not, a liquid or not a beverage is just the very definition of insanity. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's an example of, the way these lawsuits have taken over litigation and make a bad name for lawyers. Listen, the reality of this case, and most people don't are not looking from this perspective, is that it's a class action case, and it's an example of hundreds of these type of cases where attorneys jump in and they file lawsuits on behalf of a class of people. And you know who the real winners are in the case? Guess who?
Starbucks.
The attorneys.
Oh, the attorneys. I forgot about you guys. Of course.
Right. The plaintiff's attorneys make millions of dollars. They make 25% of the ultimate results in these cases. So when you hear about, lawsuits over a Subway sandwich not being quite 12 inches or, Southwest Airlines not honoring their expired drink coupons. These lawsuits are not, you know, the litigants, the class, are only getting, you know, coupons. They're getting maybe $25. Who's really making out are the attorneys. So that's what these class actions are based on.
I am curious, Rich, are you a warm drink guy or a cold drink guy?
I don't drink either. Actually, to be honest, I've never tasted coffee in my life. I know
that sounds insane.
And fantastic. What a burden off of your back.
Yeah, I've never tasted coffee, so I don't drink coffee, but mm-hmm. you know, people in my family too. My daughters, my 11-year-olds actually, you know, love Starbucks. But again, it's common sense. Like in the Subway case, I don't know if you heard about that one where, you know, people said there was a class action on behalf of people who said that it was an 11.75-inch sandwich instead of a 12-inch. I mean, that case settled, but the court found that there's really no damage. There's no noticeable difference. It's just, again, basic common sense that who cares? I mean, who cares if a sandwich is a couple inches less than 12 inches?
It is interesting, though, that Rich says that, though, Patty, because sometimes the Starbucks people put a lot of ice in there.
Hold on. My bigger question is, they settled that? So when you say they settled, that means Subway was like, we don't want to go all the way to court, so here's some of a bunch of money?
Oh, yeah. I think it was just under $600,000 that Subway paid to settle that case. I mean, listen, ultimately, most of these class actions get settled because exactly what the plaintiff's attorneys are hoping for is that the cost of settling is less than, you know, the ultimate attorney's fees and cost of litigating the case. So
they're going to get paid either way, so that's why they take absolute nonsense lawsuits like this.
Listen, of course, the unfortunate reality of litigation, and I see it every day, is that you sometimes have to settle cases because the exorbitant cost of litigating them are, you know, higher than the cost of resolving them. I mean, thankfully, you know, in my opinion, some corporations draw a line on the sand. A lot of my clients do that, and they say, listen, we don't think there's any liability. We don't think that this case has any merit, so we're going to fight it regardless of how much it costs. But, you know, a lot of companies have to do a cost-benefit analysis and decide economically it makes more sense to just, you know, pay something than fighting it.
How much does so this lady was like, you know what, enough is enough. The ice thing is just too much for me. I'm suing. How much financial investment is coming from her? Like, does she have to have 10 grand just to even have this idea to do it? Or can I, with $5, just go sue somebody when it gets convenient for me?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, there are costs involved in any litigation, but, you know, all of these lawsuits on the plaintiff side are taken on a contingency. So the attorneys front the costs. They front the filing fees. They front, you know, any litigation costs like depositions and discovery. And ultimately, that will be taken out of the settlement. So really, the plaintiffs don't pay anything out of pocket. All these, you know, expenses are fronted by the plaintiff's firm. And if the plaintiff doesn't recover, then the attorney's out of luck. But when they do recover, then the expenses are deducted from the amount of money that the plaintiff receives.
So they're basically taking a chance on this case. You know, if the attorney is taking this, figures Starbucks is such a big, huge monopoly on coffee, maybe they'll settle because they don't want to have the bad press.
Right.
Is that possible?
Correct. I mean,
hey,
sure.
Rich, can you hang on for another segment? We'll ask you some more legal questions. All right, appreciate that. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, broadcasting live from our Allstate Showcase Studios West. Joining us in the studio on Michigan Avenue in the Tribune Tower, we have Bob Ferguson running our show, our engineer of the evening. And thank you so much, Bob. We also have Brandon C. Price. He is the mastermind, the genius behind Vamp. Craig Collins is running the show as our producer. Esmeralda Leon is our, you know, she's always here for us, except for Friday nights. And I really, you know, I love Roger Badish, Esmeralda. So it's good to hear you four nights a week with us. It's fun to have you.
Thanks.
And I'm sad that we can't go to Risky Business tomorrow night together, by the way.
I know.
That's sort of sad.
I want to see it,
but Nick D's movie at Movie Co.
Yeah.
Rich Lenkoff, have you seen Risky Business recently? Did you see it? I'm guessing you were a young man when you saw Risky Business.
I was young. I was not living in Chicago, so it was one of the reasons I moved to Chicago. I figured if I moved here, the same thing will happen to me.
You know what? Actually, now that we're talking about Risky Business, which is, by the way, Nick D's Movie Club tomorrow night at Rosemont, the Rosemont Movie Co. You know, that's something that did you ever think about that as you were studying for your legal degree as a lawyer? Like, you know, someone just deciding, you know what? We'll just go ahead and peddle sex. We'll just go ahead and charge for that. Have you ever come across a case, anything like Risky Business, where someone just decided to, you know, create their own brothel, basically?
Well, funny that you should ask, Patty.
This is totally random. I apologize if I...
It is. It is. So in my law school, well after I graduated, but probably 10 years afterwards, and this case got a lot of press, there was a law student who... Or maybe she actually, I think she graduated. I think she was a practicing lawyer, but she was still in the DeKalb area. So I went to Northern Illinois University for law school. And this graduate of our law school was practicing law by day and by night. The allegation goes she was a prostitute. She was doing this while she was practicing law. And I believe that she was actually convicted and disbarred. So
those are long work hours.
Very long.
Very long work hours.
Listen, the legal market is tough. Tough to make ends meet.
No kidding. I'm paying those law school debts. I mean, there must be a moment where some people just go, hey, you know, some people want it. I've got what they want. I don't know. It's such a weird path to choose. But
blind man.
The oldest job in the world.
And what is it? Well, okay. So I've opened a bizarre can of worms, but I mean, because we, you know, look, we'll watch it on television and in movies. There's another series, I think, like on Showtime or one of the cable networks that is now, you know, I think it's called The Girlfriend Experience, and you know, it's the kind of thing where it's just, you know, how do people get away with? And Rich, I'm not asking if you have any clients right now, but it does seem like you can find ways, whether it's on Craigslist or online or calling an escort or Girlfriend Experience. There are a lot of different ways people are doing this, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, there's Backpages, which is probably the most visited site for that kind of thing that exists, you know, in almost every city where you could, you know, pick and choose prostitutes. Lot of, you know, I know Tom Dart here in Illinois has been very, very aggressive in going after Backpages, as human trafficking. But yeah, for sure, easier than ever, I think, to engage in that kind of thing.
What is it, you know, where do they draw the line? I mean, do they go after more street prostitution? I'm sorry. I know that this was not something you had planned on discussing. I just was thinking about Risky Business. And, you know, that's a topic that has been used in movies more for humor, like, you know, Pretty Woman, Risky Business. Again, there are, you know, it's just kind of something we take kind of casually. We see it in movies and we know there's a very dark side. There's sex slaves trade in the United States and around the world. But I mean, do you have any sense of, you know, how deeply this runs and how much it can be sort of under the surface?
I mean, I really don't know the prevalence of it. You know, I don't practice in that area. I mean, I know that in Illinois it's a Class A misdemeanor. It could go up to a felony, but you know, in terms of stats or numbers, I don't know how prevalent it is. I know that, it, again, like we talked about earlier, it is easier than ever. It's not like, right, you know, back 20 years ago where you would literally have to, you know, drive down certain streets in Chicago to find it. Now, obviously, with technology being what it is, it's easier than ever to engage in that.
Have access. Again, I didn't mean to lead you down this bizarre path, because last week we spoke to you about the Hastert case, the Dennis Hastert case. And Brandon, I don't know if you're how familiar you are with this case. The former Speaker of the House, one of the most powerful Republicans at one time, and one of the most powerful men in the country, was convicted of mostly it was federal banking fraud. But really, the judge said it was because of what he had done to young boys. What have you seen? What kind of conversations have you witnessed since then, Rich? As far as like the reaction and the fallout.
Yeah, just to make a couple takeaways since late last week. A lot of praise for Judge Durkin, the federal judge who handed down the sentence. A lot of praise for him going above the recommendation by Zach Fardin, who is the U.S. attorney who worked out the deal. So a lot of people are praising Judge Durkin for giving Hastert 18 months when the when the government had recommended six. They worked out this deal for 6 months. And much to the surprise of a lot of us, Durkin gave Hastert 18 months. And, as you mentioned, he went beyond the federal banking law violation, which generally doesn't even warrant an arrest. It's usually a slap on the wrist. So
right.
Durkin said that, Hastert was a serial sexual predator, that had he been able to, under the statute, he would have handed him, a lot harsher sentence. He increased the sentence based on Hastert's failure to comply with the FBI and lied to the government. So, a lot of praise for Judge Durkin for coming out so forcefully.
Well, I agree.
I'm sorry. So he was convicted of being a serial child molester and he get
no.
Okay.
No, he was convicted of federal banking fraud. He was being extorted by one of his victims, and the thing was that there were more than one. And I really, Rich, in the aftermath, I mean, does your mind kind of wander to how not only did he get away with it so long, but this is not something somebody does and stops. There has to have been so many people that covered this up along the way, on so many levels.
Wait, why wasn't he convicted of this?
Sorry. hold on a second, Rich. Let's go to the one thing first, Rich. I mean, have you thought about that, or is anyone talking about, he had to have been doing this his entire career. This is not something you stop doing.
No, for sure. And you wonder, why no one came out to, talk about this. Inevitably, many people knew. I mean, we had the author of the Chicago Magazine article on Legal Face Off a few months ago discussing how, in Yorkville, where Denny Hastert is from, there's almost a conspiracy of silence about this.
Right.
There was for many, many years. He was such a beloved, local politician, brought lots of money back to the district, was a wrestling coach for many years, was sort of like Mr. Midwest. And people had to know, but no one spoke up, which, is really troubling. It's also, you wonder why the victims didn't speak up earlier, but then you understand
yes.
the psychology of abuse that, especially with someone who's in that authority figure, you understand how difficult it would be to speak up against Denny Hastert, and, you understand why they didn't.
Yeah, Brandon, this was a man who, he was a wrestling coach was it Yorkville, Illinois?
Yes.
Rich, and he had attacked several, I haven't gone into the details of what they have shared as far as their experiences. As far as I understand, some of it was massages that went too far. There was a young man who demanded money from Hastert, otherwise he was going to share his story. We don't know how many victims there have been. And Dennis Hastert was – not only was he one of the most powerful Republicans in the country, he became the Speaker of the House. He also became a very powerful lobbyist, continued to make extraordinary amounts of money, and ultimately agreed to pay up to $3 million to this man who was blackmailing him. So, Brandon, the statute of limitations has run out on the young men that he attacked in the 70s and 80s. But what he was indicted in and found guilty of was bank fraud, because he was withdrawing more than $10,000, right? Rich, that's the trigger for the government and for the FBI?
Correct.
Right. So if you withdraw and you have to answer as to why you're withdrawing more than $10,000, and he lied about it, it was for this extortion money. And he lied, and ultimately, was it both the lying and the reason behind it, Rich?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the mere fact that he was withdrawing that amount of money and was doing it from several banks and didn't report it, that in and of itself was a violation. But again, that doesn't generally even get to the, criminal stage. That usually doesn't get you arrested. It usually gets
right.
you just fix it. Even if you are arrested for that, most people just, they don't get prosecuted. But again, of course, most people aren't. the former Speaker of the House, and most people aren't withdrawing that money so they could pay $3.5 million for, you know, to cover up sexual abuse of kids. So that's why this case, you know, drew such prominence, and that's why, you know, the feds went after Hastert quite appropriately to the degree that they did. And then it turned, you know, Hastert lied to them. He said he was being extorted when, in fact, this was a deal that he cooked up to silence one of his accusers. And then, you know, that led to the unraveling of the story revealing his sexual abuse. Now, unfortunately, the statute of limitations ran, as you mentioned, for prosecuting him criminally for those acts. But Judge Durkin, to his credit, didn't limit the penalty to just the 6 months that they worked out for the bank fraud, but extended it, saying that this is sort of the maximum that I could give you. I can't prosecute you really for the sexual abuse, but I could prosecute you for obstruction of justice and the bank fraud.
And I think that a lot of people are wondering, you know, here's somebody who was, you know, very vocal about family values and going after the president, after President Clinton, and, you know, talking about gay marriage. It does make you stop and go, okay. I mean, there are so many people that already distrust our politicians. And this just seems like such an abuse on so many levels and such a disappointment to it. I don't know. It seems to me that, I don't know, I guess the outrage doesn't seem to be coming out in general, regardless of the political party. It's just somebody who is, you know, seems to call people to a higher moral standard. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, no question, especially when you consider, you know, this guy was two heartbeats away from being the most powerful man on earth, someone who had a pretty clean and pristine record. If he was doing this now, again, most of this happened well before he was Speaker of the House, although, you know, we don't know. We don't know if it kept going on, but at least the allegations when he was a wrestling coach, that's well before he was in the House. But if that could happen with, if this could happen with that guy, you know, the logical question is, what's going on out there that we're not aware of? And that's obviously the scary thing.
I agree. Well, thank you. Brandon, did you want to ask anything else? I didn't want to cut you off. I know it's a startling story.
At first, I was upset. It was like everyone's applauding this man for giving him 18 months. But now that I get it, I am applauding this man.
Yeah.
He did what he could do. That's pretty cool to see.
Well, and the other one takeaway from it, just quickly, is that it is starting or continuing a discussion of eliminating the statute of limitations. I mean, just for the reasons we're talking about, it often does take years and years, sometimes decades, for victims of especially childhood sexual abuse to come forward. And, you know, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan issued a statement on Thursday saying that, you know, hopefully this will spur some changes to the statute of limitations. Even though Illinois has a pretty long one, I think it's 20 years, this is a good example of why that's not long enough, that maybe there should be no statute of limitations at all for this type of crime.
And this type of crime being sexual assault, and would you say, I mean, because there's also a backlog of rape kits that have been there for decades, you know, if we have a statute of limitations, I mean, what's the point of even holding on to those unless you can use them in you know, collaboration with another case? It's kind of disheartening.
Well, I don't understand. Like, so what's the benefit? Like, just to protect people from digging up 30-year-old stuff that may or may not have happened? Is that why we have this in place?
Yeah, I mean, the benefit of this statute of limitations or the logic behind that or any statute of limitations is that at some point, you know, judicial economy and just, you know, reliability of evidence warrants that you have to shut, you know, the ability to bring a lawsuit, because after 20 years, let's say the idea is people's memories fade, evidence is gone, evidence, you know, disappears, and therefore the reliability of evidence, the reliability of testimony is such that it's hard to prosecute them. On the other hand, you know, the issues or the reasons you would eliminate a statute of limitations is for the very reasons we're talking about, especially when it comes to sexual abuse among children. You know, children are not going to come forward until they're adults. You know, they're just conditioned to respect authority. This is a great example. They had, you know, the Survivors Network of people abused by priests, SNAP. They had the president of that advocacy group very prominent after the Hastert case last week. And she said basically these victims have been closed out of the courtroom because it takes them so long to tell their stories. So, you know, I think specifically for victims of childhood sexual abuse, there's a lot of logic to eliminating the statute of limitations.
Well, let's talk about this again sometime, because I'd like to know what it would take to move that forward. I agree. I think it's something that has to happen and should happen. I'm going to go yell at people in Springfield. Thank you so much, Rich Lenkov. You can find him at WGNplus.com. Legal Face Off drops on the weekends, right? Is it every Friday?
Every other Friday. That's assuming that, you know, my co-host is awake and shows up for the show.
But someday I'm going to get in so much trouble with Jason Whiteside. I just know I am. It's going to be a bad day for me.
I got your back.
All right, appreciate that. Thanks so much. That's Rich Lenkov. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.